I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
MSW Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. Today, David Pecker takes the stand after opening statements in the Trump election interference trial. An agreement is reached between prosecutors and Trump attorneys on the $175 million New York Attorney General civil fraud bond. Proud Boys appear at a Trump rally, drawing criticism from President Biden. How Mike Johnson came to embrace Ukraine aid. The Supreme Court waves off another Carrie Lake lawsuit. And Trump's legal bills drain millions from his coffers. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Happy Tuesday. How are you?
I am good. I wasn't sure if I'd be with you today, but my event finished early and you got back to the West Coast on time and everything ran smoothly.
So here we are. It's all just a big crapshoot anywho, but we made it today. I've been watching, you know, the court reporting from the trial. We found out today we're going to get transcripts of what happens in court the next business day. That's pretty extraordinary from what I, from, you know, my understanding of what people who normally report on the New York courts have to say. So We'll be looking forward to that. We're going to cover it in a lot of detail, Pete and I, on tomorrow's cleanup on aisle 45. As we know, the remainder of the jury was seated on Friday. We had a Sandoval hearing today, and 6 of the 13 past legal problems for Trump can be brought in if he testifies. I doubt he will. And we had opening statements today, and we're going to, again, go over that in detail. And like I said, Mr. Pecker came onto the stand to start testifying. Now, tomorrow, we don't go right back to Pecker. We actually have a gag order hearing in the morning, and that's actually today as you listen to this show. So we'll talk about that either on the Beans here or over on Cleanup on L45 or both. So that is what's going on with that trial. And you know, I was waiting for this $175 million bond hearing, right?
Mm-hmm. You've been working very hard to understand it. Very hard.
Yeah, well, I'm pissed because I thought for sure they were going to reject this bond and give him like another week to come up with the money.
Yeah.
But they settled. They settled with him and Trump's lawyers. And while Trump was in court criminal trial, his lawyers were over arguing for him with the $175 million bond. So what they're going to do is they're going to make sure that Knight Specialty Insurance Company, Mr. Hanke, has full control over Donald's $175 million Schwab account, and that they can't, you know, it's not going to be in Trump's control. So he can't, you know, change it from cash to mutual funds or anything like that. The only thing that I don't understand, though, is that it's volatile, right? And it can dip below $175 million. And I don't think that Donald Trump would be able to true that up. But that's what they agreed on. So the bond is done. And going forward, they're going to sign the paperwork. We'll see if anything comes up out of it otherwise. But I didn't think that KSIC was able to guarantee this bond because they're incompetent and horrible.
Yeah.
I can't remember the terms of art, but they shouldn't have been able to, like, their parent company is in the Caymans. Anyway, I'm a little bummed because I did all that, like, ooh, I learned everything about excess lines insurance. But now we know. So that's what's going on right now. But we do have quite a bit of news to get to today. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right. First up from Isaac Arnsdorf at the Washington Post, at least 10 men wearing the uniform of the Proud Boys, which, as we know, is a violent extremist group, appeared outside the entrance of a rally for the presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump, prompting condemnation from Biden's campaign. The men wearing the black and yellow shirts, hats, and masks, identifying them as Proud Boys, were seen walking along the line of vendors selling Trump apparel and souvenirs around the time that the gates opened for the planned Trump rally. One of the men held a sign saying, "Free all the J6 prisoners," a reference obviously to people charged in the attack on the Capitol. Now, Trump campaign senior advisor Chris LaCivita said, "We don't comment on stupid." That's okay. When reached out for comment, was he talking about the person who asked or was he talking about the Proud Boys?
It's a fair question.
As usual, vague as shit. A spokesperson for the Biden campaign condemned Trump for emboldening violent extremists. Quote, "When Trump told his supporters to stop the steal, they attacked the Capitol, violently assaulted police officers and tried to overturn the election." That's Biden's spokesman, Amar Moussa. "And now they're back, standing once again as Trump threatens a bloodbath if he loses in November. This is Donald Trump's America, where white nationalists and violent far-right extremists are empowered and working families are left behind." Now, it was not clear if the Proud Boys entered the event, which was subsequently canceled because of rain. They were seen walking away from the entrance and were not seen by a Washington Post reporter inside the event. A county sheriff's deputy on site said officers were aware that they were there. The Proud Boys, as we know, right-wing extremist group with a history of violence. They were heavily involved in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Their former national chairman, Henry Enrique Tarrio, was sentenced to 22 years in prison and 36 months of supervised release for seditious conspiracy and other charges related to the Capitol breach. You would think they would learn their lesson. No, apparently not. Trump has reportedly and repeatedly pledged to pardon the rioters without specifying who among the more 1,000 people charged. He has increasingly glorified the January 6th defendants, calling them patriots and hostages. He recorded a duet of himself reciting the Pledge of Allegiance with incarcerated January 6th defendants singing the national anthem, and he plays that at all of his rallies. Now, Trump, whose baseless claims that the 2020 election was illegitimate, inspired the Capitol attack, and he's never disavowed domestic political violence, not once. Asked during the 2020 presidential debate to condemn the Proud Boys specifically, we remember Trump said to stand back and stand by. Members of the group reacted on social media by celebrating the remark as a form of recognition, kind of a call to arms, really. The rally was supposed to be Trump's first major public address since his trial started on Monday in New York. As we know, he's accused of falsifying business records to conceal payments to Stormy Daniels in a scheme to interfere in the 2016 election. Jury selection concluded Friday. Opening statements will begin this coming Monday. I'm not sure why Washington Post is calling them opening arguments. That is incorrect. I'll send them a note. The crowd awaiting Trump at the airport tarmac was similar in size to the audience during the rally in 2022 in the same place. And of course, there were vendors with selling T-shirts with his mug shot on it that say "Never Surrender," even though that's the day he literally surrendered. Bumper stickers and shirts directed at Biden, Confederate flag bed sheets, shirts for the QAnon online extremist movement. It's just a bunch of fucking grifters, right? MAGA visors with attached orange poofs. One flag said, "I'd rather be an American than a Democrat." Of course, there were Trump 2024 flags. And then, of course, one of them said, "The rules have changed." Like, no, they really haven't. It's why you're in court. Also mingling with rally goers as they lined up was Scott Pressler, a well-known pro-Trump activist focused on voter turnout. He and another woman were collecting signatures that they say would help independent Cornel West qualify for the ballot in North Carolina. There were people collecting signatures at a Trump rally for Cornel West.
Ugh.
"This helps take away votes from Joe Biden," they said. "We're helping Trump. We're helping the Trump team who's trying to get him on there." That's what the woman added. Okay. That's gross to me.
Yeah, the whole thing. It is. I don't know how we got here, but I sort of know how we got here, but let's move on. This one's from John Fritz at CNN. The Supreme Court brushed aside a lawsuit Monday from Republican Senate candidate Carrie Lake challenging the use of electronic voting machines in Arizona. Lake, who filed the lawsuit during her failed campaign for governor in 2020, challenged whether the state's electronic voting machines assured, quote, "a fair and accurate vote," Two lower courts dismissed the suit, finding that Lake and former Republican state lawmaker Mark Fincham had not been harmed in any way that allowed them to sue. Calling the
lost.
That's it. Calling the precise nature of Lake's claim not clear. The ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Like her filter.
Yeah, not clear. Actually, yes, her filter does make things very fuzzy. But the precise nature of Lake's claim, they said, was unclear. This is from the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. That's what they said. The lawsuit was based on speculative concerns that the machines could be hacked. You're not allowed to bring lawsuits on theoreticals that could happen in the future. Although Lake and Fincham cited, quote, opinions by purported experts on manipulation risk in the lawsuit, they did, quote, not contend that any electronic tabulation machine in Arizona has ever been hacked. This is what the appeals court said. On appeal, the court continued, lawyers for Lake conceded that their arguments were limited to potential future hacking and not based on any past harm. Fucking bizarre. Although one of those did pass the Supreme Court, so that's probably why she thought she could do it. The Supreme Court dismissed the appeal Monday without comment, which is very common. Lake had sued the Arizona Secretary of State and the boards of supervisors of Maricopa and Pima counties. All three waived their rights to respond to the Supreme Court appeal, a signal that they believed the litigation was frivolous. And it was.
Man, we don't need to respond, really.
No, they're like, psh. Yeah. Lake accused the Supreme Court of intentional inertia on election issues after intervening in the 2000 election in Bush v. Gore case, even though the court this term is heavily involved in several appeals involving former President Trump's the presumptive GOP presidential nominee. They're involved in a whole lot of his cases. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Unclear. Carrie Lake is unclear. I love it.
The fuzzy filter.
Next up from Annie Grayer and Manu Raju at CNN. The day after Iran attacked Israel, House Speaker Mike Johnson was on the phone with a man who suddenly held the keys to his legislative agenda and potentially his own future. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries. In a phone call that has not been previously reported, Mike Johnson said he was ready to act on foreign aid, even though that would enrage Republicans who did not support additional assistance to Ukraine and could potentially cost him his job. That's what he told Hakeem Jeffries on the phone. Jeffries pressed Johnson on how many Republicans he could deliver to support the aid for Ukraine, knowing House Democrats would have to bring the rest. But when Johnson returned to D.C., on Monday, plotting his path forward, he was faced with an onslaught of attacks from many of his colleagues on the right side of the aisle. Louisiana Republican, that's where he's from, by the way, where they're trying to take away lunch breaks for child workers. Mike Johnson quickly began hearing an earful from hardline conservatives, coming to realize his risky gambit of holding separate votes on aid for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, and later tying those bills together in one package without including conservative demands over stricter border policies, that could trigger a snap vote to remove him as speaker. And then on Tuesday, Johnson sat in his office as members streamed in to voice their complaints and level their demands. And by nighttime, he was wrestling with how to proceed, feeling the weight of the future and his future. And knowing history was watching him, Johnson, a devout Christian, turned to prayer. I don't really understand why the answer wasn't clear in the first place, but he started praying.
It's important to him.
Johnson ultimately emerged Wednesday, firm in his convictions that he was on the right path to make the most consequential decision of his political career by moving ahead with billions of dollars in foreign aid. The decision culminated in a tense scene on the House floor as Republican members traded insults, and the speaker navigated his warring factions. Kick rocks, Tubby. That was Rep. Derek Van Orden to Matt Gaetz, the Florida Republican trying to derail Johnson's plans. In a message to his colleagues ahead of the release of the legislative text, Johnson acknowledged the significant member feedback and discussion, unquote. That's a nice way to put it. And publicly, Johnson, who came into the job somewhat accidentally after McCarthy was ousted in October, was even more blunt. He said, "My philosophy is do the right thing and let the chips fall where they may. If I operated out of fear over motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job. Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now." Of course, he could have done this 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
"I can make a selfish decision and do something that's different, but I'm doing here what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing aid to Ukraine right now is critically important." That's what he said. The $95 billion aid package, which has the backing of President Biden, ultimately passed on Saturday with the support of 210 Democrats and 101 Republicans. It now heads to the Senate, which is expected to give final approval this week. Despite the bipartisan vote, Johnson admonished Democrats who waved Ukrainian flags on the House floor after the bill's passage. It's like, sorry, we're going to rub it in. In March, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky lobbied the speaker directly. And within minutes of the House approving a new military aid package for Ukraine on Saturday, Zelensky offered his thanks to U.S. lawmakers, and in particular to Johnson for his decision that keeps history on the right track. And more recently, Johnson received a key intelligence briefing from CIA Director Bill Burns, who painted a picture of the dire situation on the battlefield in Ukraine and the global consequences of inaction. And that's according to multiple sources with knowledge of the situation. That briefing apparently left a lasting impression, and Johnson became increasingly convinced the fate of Western democracy was on his shoulders. And that's according to sources close to him. So it looks like that CIA briefing from Director Burns had a lot to do with this.
Oh, yeah.
Another factor that sources say weighed heavily on his decision-making is Johnson's oldest son recently was accepted into the Naval Academy. Let's think about that. When it's your kid.
Yep.
Who may have to go fight a war because you didn't stop Putin and he marched into NATO territory and now we've triggered Article 5, which forces us to put boots on the ground, and your son has just been accepted to the Naval Academy, that's when you make the right decision. Unbelievable. Quote, to put it bluntly, I'd rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. We've been fucking telling you this for the last 6 months. My son is going to be in the Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is for so many American families. That's what he told reporters. This is not a game. This is not a joke. It's so frustrating.
I can imagine, especially as someone who served.
If Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and her supporters make good on their threat to force a vote to oust him as speaker, he'll almost certainly need to rely on Democrats to bail him out. Johnson maintains that he has not asked any Democrats for their help, but senior Republicans believe they'll be able to count on support across the aisle to swiftly kill any motion to vacate him. It's still unclear whether Democrats will throw him a lifeline, but they have expressed a willingness to save Johnson, especially after he defied his right flank to move ahead with foreign aid. Slow. That's how New York Rep. Gregory Meeks, top Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said when asked how Johnson handled Ukraine aid. Slow. It should have been done months ago. Should have just put the Senate bill on the floor. It would have gotten 300 votes, unquote. And I totally agree. A part of Johnson's reluctance, Trump, who's been critical of Ukraine aid because he's working for Putin and has the power to make or break any legislation and his own speakership. In recent weeks, allies counseled Johnson to keep the former president in the loop of his potential foreign aid plans. And when Johnson finally announced his plans and the legislative text became public on Wednesday, he was facing an all-out revolt from his right flank. And, you know, there's a lot more to this story. I really recommend that you, like, go check it out. It's by CNN, Manu Raju. And Dana, they say, they talk about one particularly bizarre moment as there was an intense huddle on the floor where Al Green, Democratic rep from Texas, stood at the microphones in front of the chamber for a floor speech and began citing the Pledge of Allegiance. Johnson and the group of hardliners stopped their conversations, turned to the American flag in the front of the room, put their hands over their hearts and recited the pledge along with Green. That's according to GOP members who witnessed the moment. Then they turned back around and resumed calling each other Tubby. So it's bizarre. But
it is. And there's still big bag of rats trying to make something work in this house.
Yeah. But I'm just so struck by the, okay, you got the CIA briefing. You've been getting CIA briefings. We've been telling you this, but now his son has been accepted to the Naval Academy.
Yeah. Hoy, thank you, AG. Last in the segment, this is from Maeve Reston and Clarence Morse. Donald Trump is picking up his fundraising pace even as he fights criminal charges in four cases and appeals a nearly $500 million civil fraud judgment against him in New York. But his legal expenses continue to be a tremendous burden on his campaign and its allied groups. The latest campaign finance records, they show this. This is accounting for 26% of the spending in March by his political committees.
Wow.
26% of his spending is going to his legal fees. New Federal Election Commission filings released Saturday show that Save America Leadership PAC, a Trump-aligned group he has used to pay some of his lawyers, it took a $5 million during March and racked up $4.6 million in legal bills for Trump and some of his associates. Throughout this election cycle, Save America has spent the most on legal bills among the groups in Trump's orbit. Now, Trump's political committees have spent at least $16.7 million on legal bills so far this year. I know another $900,000 to various firms as of the end of March, bringing his overall legal fees since starting his campaign to around $86 million.
That's about what he has in his war chest right now.
Yeah. Yep. Those costs have continued to siphon money away from the main super PAC supporting Trump. That's MAGA Inc., which agreed to refund $60 million to Save America last year. They transferred $52.25 million in, quote, contribution refunds back to the leadership pack in 12 installments that begin last May. MAGA Inc. made another transfer of $5 million back to the leadership pack in March. That's accounting for almost all of Save America's money flowing in. That's what the new reports are saying. FCC reports that they do not require candidates or leadership PACs to disclose what legal matters each lawyer or law firm handled when they report payments to those firms. Still, there are signs that Trump's efforts to portray his legal troubles as unjust attacks are convincing grassroots donors to keep giving to his campaign. The FEC data show that at one key moment in the civil fraud case, for example, March 22nd, when he was being asked to post a bond of several hundred million dollars to keep New York authorities from seizing his assets, during that time, donations to his super PAC, they spiked to that campaign. A New York appeals court panel later said that former president would be allowed to post a reduced bond of $170 million. We've been talking about that. March 22nd, Trump wrote an all caps post on his Truth Social platform claiming that he had almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intended to use in my campaign for president. That's what he's saying. He claimed in the post that the judge in the case was trying to take that money away from him. By the way, Trump's attorneys had said in a March 18th court filing that he was unable to finance an appeal bond of more than $450 million to cover the judgment in the business fraud case. So we know the truth there. It was his best fundraising day since his mugshot was taken in Fulton County, Georgia, in August. In the last half of March, after clinching the Republican nomination, Trump has averaged over $1.2 million a day via the online fundraising platform WinRed. Campaign finance records filed this week show that the joint Trump fundraising efforts from the Republican National Committee is raking in big checks, with key donors giving the maximum of more than $800,000. But the GOP nominee's available cash at the end of March, it still trailed far behind Biden and that allied Democratic groups had stashed. MAGA Inc., the Trump line super PAC, it netted large checks from some of the Republican Party's biggest donors. We got Robert Bigelow. He gave another $4.1 million to the super PAC, bringing the total he had donated to MAGA Inc., $9.2 million.
What an idiot.
I know. Linda McMahon, who headed the Small Business Administration during the Trump administration and now chairs the America First Policy Institute, she gave $5 million to the group. MAGA Inc. said it had about $33 million in cash on hand at the end of March after it refunded $5 million to Save America. Got Nicole Shanahan's personal wealth was one of their chief assets when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. chose her as his running mate for his long-shot independent bid for the White House. FEC records show that Shanahan helped to replenish Kennedy's campaign treasury. A day after joining the ticket on March 26th, she donated $2 million to the campaign. The money is much needed infusion that could bolster Kennedy's efforts to get on the ballot and in many states as possible. As a candidate, Shanahan can donate an unlimited amount of money to the campaign.
That's nuts.
Yep. Before joining the ticket, Shanahan had donated to the maximum $6,600 to Kennedy's campaign. Her venture firm, Planeta Management LLC, they gave $500,000 in July to Common Sense PAC, which is a ridiculous name for his PAC, another outside group supporting Kennedy. Planeta Management LLC, they gave $4 million in January to America Values 2024, which is a super PAC supporting Kennedy, money that helped pay for a pro-Kennedy ad during the Super Bowl that everyone, including his family, were very upset about.
Yeah.
So reports filed to the FEC this week, they show the Democrats extending their fundraising advantage well beyond presidential race to many key areas in battleground for control of the House and the Senate, which is great. The Republican National Committee, which was struggling to raise cash throughout the GOP primary, they doubled its cash on hand, ending March with $22 million in cash. But the Democratic National Committee, they still doubled that amount in its war chest, reporting $45.2 million in cash at the end of March. The National Republican Congressional Committee, which is focused on House races, has nearly $56 million in cash on hand at the end of March, significantly less, by the way, than the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which has $71.1 million in cash. And all those numbers, lastly, AG Senator Jackie Rosen of Nevada, a state that Democrats narrowly carried in 2016 and 2020 presidential races, they reported more than $13.2 million in cash at the end of March, preparing her for a difficult race in November. Sam Brown, who's a retired Army captain, he's the front runner in the GOP race. He had about $2.3 million in cash at the end of March, so they've got almost $10 million up on that. But now his Republican rival? That's former Ambassador Jeff Gunter. He reported nearly $2.6 million in his campaign treasury after loaning his campaign $2.7 So he has $2.6 after loaning $2.7 million to his own campaign. I just don't fucking get it.
No. And we have to keep in mind now that abortion will be on the ballot in Nevada in November. So that's going to make a huge difference.
Thank goodness.
Yes, thank goodness for that, and Arizona as well, and Florida too. I mean, all these swing states, it's good to see. All right, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the good news. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Good news, good news.
And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Mutt, Find the Cat, What's the Model of Your Oxalotl, any animal at all, capybaras, send in a photo of a capybara and I will guess that it is a capybara. I'm very good at that. And, you know, if you have a shelter pup, we can try to guess their breeds, but we're not very good at it. But it's still fun. And it's nice to see the photos. If you don't have pod pet tax to pay, you can send us an adoptable pet in your area. And we'll see if we can find a forever home for them. And really, anything you want to send us, whether it's thesis or dissertation titles, stories about student debt relief, those are amazing. If you have stories about blankies or whoobies or stuffed animals that have been in your family for years, I love those. And of course, you know, shit kids say, self shout outs, small business shout outs to loved ones, send it all to us. dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. First up, from Amber and Tara, pronouns, speaker's choice. Greetings from Hollyland, Missouri. We're a queer lesbian couple in rural Missouri. One of us is an Army veteran. Thank you for your service. We love your podcast. Swearing is therapeutic. Shout out to First Presbyterian Church of Warrensburg, Missouri, a church that sponsors Pride every year. We want to play How Fine Is My Caprine? Here's a pic of one of our herd, our oldest goat, Willie Billy. Look at this beautiful baby.
Oh, my goodness.
So great. Thank you for that.
Thank you indeed. All right, this one's from Cat Pronouns, she and her. Hello, Beans community. I have a shout out to give to my wonderful husband of 23 years and his project he's worked on for so long. If there are any sci-fi nerds out there, and I know there are, I added that, please take a listen to Flight of the Bucket podcast from Super Happy Productions. This project is worked on by him and his friends for the span of 10 years. First as a radio drama performed in front of a live audience, then committed to the page and recorded to become a podcast. He's working so hard and put so much of his creative writing talent into this, plus the local artists that committed to their roles throughout the evolution of what this became. The podcast was released a few weeks ago, and they're doing pretty well with the downloads and follows and all the other stats people worry about when a new podcast is released. I humbly ask for the Leguminati to give it a listen if you want to laugh. It's silly and fun. For pet tags, I've added pics of my three work-from-home supervisors. We got Loki, the gray one, Bandit, the black one, and Luna, the tortie. Make sure I put in the time every day to my computer and plenty of lap naps throughout the workday. Thanks, Bean listeners, and thank you, AG and DG, for helping me get through every day with laughter.
Awesome. And our producer, Kat, has left us a note that the sound design in the trailer is very good.
Nice.
And yeah, we'll have a little link here in the show notes. And then look at these babies. Oh, adorable kitties. I love the voids, too. All right, next up from Nicole, pronouns she and her. Good morning, ladies of the legumes. I was just as surprised as AG was that a jury was seated in the election interference hush money trial in only 1 week. I thought it would be next to impossible to find enough unbiased jurors in the New York metro area. I grew up in New Jersey, and I've been familiar with Trump's lack of ethics or business acumen all my life. If the defense lawyers had to look through my history for any signs of bias, they might have found an essay I wrote in AP English class in 1989, in which I hypothesized that the only explanation for Trump's fame and success was that he made a deal with the devil. I still have that essay, a benefit of coming from a pack rat family, and I'm so proud to say I got an A. If a Jersey girl high schooler from the 80s knew enough about Trump to be biased against him, how would they ever find enough New Yorkers? But here we are, and I'm excited to see justice at work. Thank you for the excellent coverage of all the things. For Pod Pet Tax, I'm sending a picture of tiger toe beans taken when we were at the Exotic Feline Rescue Center in Center Point, Indiana. We went to Indianapolis to view the total eclipse. It was an amazing trip. Look at the toe beans on the tiger.
So beautiful. I love big cats. They're some of my favorites. I'm talking big cats.
The big baby.
Oh, yeah. All right. This one's from Soren. No pronouns given. Hi. Listening all the way from Denmark. Wanted to share some good news. When my daughter was born as our second child, we noticed something off. After months of going through specialists, we found out she has a chromosomal error on two chromosomes. She has deletions and insertions. She's quite unique, and no exact replica of this is in the database.
Wow.
At the time, she was functionally blind because of delayed sight development. She had double-sided ptosis, drooping eyelids, and underdeveloped muscles. We didn't know if she was ever going to walk, speak, or see. As time went by, her eyesight normalized. She started walking and talking and got operations so she could use her eyelids. Nothing has come easy to her. She spent years slowly helping her overcome fear of immersion because she loves swimming, but she feared putting her head underwater. We read with her each day because she has a hard time learning, but she wants to be able to. At 13, she has the best friends at her school. She started horseback riding with a special therapeutic riding instructor, and she has swim class each week. She's never going to be, quote, typical in the eyes of the world. However, she'll be loving, active, extroverted bundle of energy who loves dancing with her rhythmically challenged father and giving hugs. And finally, while we are not a paradise on earth, we've had our share of struggles with different services to get the proper support at times. All the specialists, the testing, the operations, the special needs school, preschool, club, etc. They have been supplied by public health insurance or subsidized, so our share was the same as any other parents. Here are pictures of her after her eyelids were fixed and a recent one of her on a horse. Oh, look at this sweet baby.
Aww. Oh, wow.
What a gorgeous, that second picture, the horse, her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the person leading. This is just gorgeous.
Absolutely. That's a heck of a journey.
Indeed.
Soren, thank you for sharing that. Incredible. Next up, Britt, pronouns she and her. Hello, Beans Queens. My sister and I are both regular Beans followers and gave you a recent shout out on the good news contributed by my sis for my physically challenged nephew, Gavin. After he voted, I remember in his very first election, the Illinois primaries. I wanted to give a follow-up. He'll be graduating from high school in May and just underwent another surgical procedure, one of many in his 17 years. This one is to hopefully help control some of his debilitating pain. So I wanted to give a shout-out to my nephew and wish him a speedy recovery, and give a big shout-out to my sis, Nikki. Parents of children with special needs endure so many things that other parents and people will never know. Gavin is in a wheelchair, requires a lot of assistance. Also, navigating the healthcare system and juggling his numerous appointments and specialists is like a full-time job. She is a great advocate, ensuring that he's getting the best care. But she's also a special ed teacher's assistant at an elementary school and is now pursuing her teaching certificate as well. Thanks, AG and DG, for all you do to our underrepresented communities. Oh, thank you, Britt, so much. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Sweet child.
Yeah, big shout out to Nikki. So I was just looking at the photo and just trying to imagine,
Yeah.
What it must be like just so brave in America. Just the amount of love, just the unconditional love here is just so incredible. I thank you for sharing these with us.
So much of it thrives in our community too. I love to see it. This next one's from Kathy, pronouns she and her. This is a shout out to my husband and my partner in life since high school, which if he graduated in 1972 is a long, long time. Through it all, he has loved and supported me and my family through many good times and also some very bad times. We moved to Florida 15 years ago from Colorado, and while it was the right thing to do at the time, we both missed our true heart home and hope to return. About a year ago, my husband introduced me to the Daily Beans as an antidote to living in a state that, among other things, boasts an extreme anti-LGBTQ agenda, an almost 100% abortion ban, and leads the country in book bans, and whose governor is now blaming librarians and teachers for the very bans he promoted. Oh my God, I did not know that part. You both are now my weekday companions on morning walks, sharing some sanity in these insane times. Your good news contribution, sharing their cup of good news, I really need to drink from. I would like to share some good news for me. We're planning a summer visit to friends in Colorado, and I mentioned to my wonderful husband that it was a shame that our itinerary doesn't coincide with one of your Daily Beans shows. Without skipping a beat, he picked up his phone, bought us tickets for the August 16th show in Washington, D.C. Wasn't a planned stop. It is now.
Awesome.
I love that. Here is my pod pet tax. Our garden flag porches of our two grand doodles, Zuzi, and Bachi, no longer with us, but in our hearts forever. Thank you for all you do. See you in August.
Look at this.
Oh, what a
babies.
Sweet picture with the little angel wings. Literally.
Aw. Zuzi and Bachi, I guess.
Yeah.
Golden doodles. They're beautiful. I love that idea to put them on have a photo of them in your garden.
It's very sweet.
That is. Everybody, thank you so much. This was like a super inspiring segment of the good news. So just thank you all so much for your strength and love and awesomeness. It really means a lot to us. Please send us whatever you have to dailybeanspod.com. Click on contact. And of course, we'll have the relevant links in the show notes for you. Do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here, my friend?
I do not.
All right. We'll head into day three of the election interference trial. And I think day two is now, but day three will be tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to it. Everybody, until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health, take care of your family. Vote blue over Q.
And please take everyone you know with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans.
The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.